This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As an Albanian doctor in Kosovo, my guest Vjoso Dobruna has been dealing with the problems of war and human rights violations, such as rape, torture, and post-traumatic stress syndrome. Last week, she arrived in the U.S. to accept the Jonathan Mann Award for the promotion of health and human rights. It's co-sponsored by the Global Health Council, Doctors of the World, and the Association Francoise Xavier Banu. Dr. Dobruna was forced to flee from Kosovo to Macedonia last year during the Serbs' ethnic cleansing of Albanians. Now back in Kosovo, she's the head of the new Department for Democratic Governance and Civil Society, which is trying to create a new democracy. She also started a center to stop the trafficking of women in Kosovo, and she serves as the president of the Pristina Center for the Protection of Women and Children, which she co-founded. The center has been treating rape victims who are suffering from sexually transmitted diseases, medical problems resulting from forced abortions, and trauma. I asked Dr. Dobruna if rape victims are often stigmatized by their own families and neighbors.
Mentally, they are being punished because it's a very patriarchal society, and rape was done really systematically in Kosovo, and not only during the war, last 10 years during besieging of villages and different areas, women were sexually harassed all the time in front of their families. So women were used, and rape and sexual harassment was used as a tool of war and tool of repression for so many years. And of course, society, as being as patriarchal as it is in Kosovo, is in the way punishing women for being raped. And there were not enough work that is being done to address these issues, because according to our society, it's not one of our priorities. So women practically are being doubled victimized.
You're trying to change what the priorities are, to make rape victims a priority, to make women who are abused by their husbands a priority.
Yes, that's what we're trying to do.
Do you have the medicines you need, for instance, in treating sexually transmitted diseases? Do you have the medicine now?
No, there are no available medicine, and at least not sufficient. And it's not only that, there is no laboratory that is working. And it's one of the most difficult cases. We are trying now with the health house in Pristina to open a small laboratory and to have 24 hours gynecologist and specialist on sexual transmitted diseases. And some of them, by the way, are being trained for 9 months here in New York. And we're bringing them back, and they're going to work there and to have this clinic open 24 hours so people can go there. But I don't think it's enough. This is only one clinic in Kosovo. We need much more to work on sexual transmitted diseases.
Are a lot of women coming to the center wondering whether they, or I suppose I should put this in the past tense, did a lot of women come to the center unsure about whether they wanted to keep the baby they were carrying who was the result of a rape?
Center doesn't perform abortions.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of women were advised, were checked, and then if they wanted to have abortion, they were advised where to go, and they were supported to go and to have an abortion. I'm not aware of any woman that kept the child, but at least it's not in my... I don't have that information. Most of them, when they got pregnant, they had aborted.
From the patients who you've seen and that your colleagues have seen at various centers, health centers, what are some of the illnesses that have been on the rise, or the types of infections that have been on the rise in the aftermath of the bombing and the ethnic cleansing?
All kinds of infectious diseases, but what it's worrying mostly, it's these two issues, sexual transmitted diseases and TB, that it's going very fast. You know, with the social situation in our communities, with most of the country destroyed, you know, and people living in poverty for so long, and after the war living in the very close spaces without sufficient food, we have about 60 new cases of TB identified weekly, and there is no absolutely just a sufficient amount of medicine that it's reaching Kosovo to administer to citizens of Kosovo. But other diseases, like infectious diseases for children, diarrheas and others, are the most common causes of death of children in Kosovo. And with the infrastructure that is not properly being rebuilt in Kosovo, and with most of the population being displaced now in towns after returning back from refugee, this situation is not going to be improved very fast.
Tuberculosis is highly contagious. Do you and do the other doctors have ways of protecting yourselves?
We most of doctors, we are vaccinated. So, and vaccination is ongoing in Kosovo. But when people are not properly nourished, it even the vaccine among children is not effective. And when they live in the environment, for example, 20 people in the same room during the winter, last winter, for example, without water, without any kind of sanitation, and without electricity on minus 30 degrees Celsius, of course, the spread of TB is going to be very fast.
What's sanitation like now in Kosovo? Have all the pipes and the rest of the infrastructure that was bombed been repaired?
No, it hasn't been repaired yet. And in most of the country, it hasn't been because, you know, just winter was too rough and there was no possibility with half of meter of snow to do any repairing. And since the spring started, you know, just there are attempts to repair, but in some 30% of territories, there are still a big, large amount of landmines. So it's going to be difficult to do repairing without having landmines taken off. But it's not only the problem. Even the before the war, Kosovo was the most undeveloped part of former Yugoslavia. So only 32% of the population of Kosovo had access to running water, and only 28% had sewage system. So it was not only a problem of war, it was a problem how Kosovo was treated during Tito's time and in former Yugoslavia. So it's a problem that dates way before.
My guest is Vioso Dobruna, and she's the president of the Pristina Center for the Protection of Women and Children in Kosovo. She also is the co-head of the Department for Democratic Governance and Civil Society. She's just won the Jonathan Mann Award for combining medicine and human rights issues. Let's talk a little bit about your experiences during the bombing. You spent some of that time in a refugee camp in Macedonia. Were you forced out of Kosovo?
Yes, I was forced out 29th of March.
What happened? How were you forced?
I was in hiding for 7 days. Six days. And
were you targeted? Is that why you went into hiding?
Yes, I was targeted. When they came, special police forces with masks came to arrest me 24th and 25th of March.
And why were you a target?
I mean, I think they had a list of prominent Kosovo Albanian activists and political leaders. So already 2 hours earlier, a friend of mine who was a member of the Council for Defense of Human Rights and Freedom was executed with two of his children. So, and they were just searching around and just arresting people, and many other, Mitrovica, another man was executed in Jakova. So, you know, they came at 3 o'clock in the morning to arrest me, and I managed to escape through Tara's door, and then I went in hiding. But after almost a week, I went out in the street, and that day there was a mass cleansing of Pristina town. So I happened to be in the street, and I was deported. Among that day, there were 80,000 Pristina citizens that were deported towards Albania and Macedonia. I was deported to Blace camp, makeshift camp, that day when most of the people were deported by trains. I was deported by car.
Your sister, your brother-in-law, and your nephew were with you. How old was your nephew?
That time he was 11 months old.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard that you hid your passport and your cell phone
in your nephew's
diaper.
Yes.
What made you think it would be safe there?
Because I thought, I mean, they were rude, and you know, as you probably know, that now they have already, they are testifying that they have killed during 3 months 800 children. So, but I couldn't believe that they are going to touch 11-month-old child. And, you know, there was no other place. I saw how they are searching people and destroying documents. So I was supposed to go a day before to France at the Human Rights Conference. So I had my ticket, my passport, and some money. And that money practically saved our life when they start beating us before deportation, and they are taking our jewelries, and they're asking for money. So we had that money, so we saved our head. So, and then, you know, just I put the cell phone and passport at his diaper, and that's how we stayed some 56, 57 hours at the border, because Macedonians had blocked the border that time. So it was the best way. And anyhow, we didn't have another diaper to change for him, so he was 56 hours at the same diaper.
Well, excuse me for asking this, but your cell phone and passport must have been a little messy in the same diaper for that long.
No, they were not.
They were not. You protected them. Okay. And yes. Did you worry about it chafing the baby to have so much stuffed in his diaper?
Of course I was. But at that moment, you don't think about those things.
Right, right.
Afterwards, you know, just you think about things, and sometimes you're just lucky. No, I was lucky to be deported. Otherwise, I would be arrested, like my friend Flora Brovina, who is being sentenced 12 years in jail.
And she is the person who won with you the Jonathan yes. Mann Award for combining yes. health yes. work and human rights work.
Yes, she's
you must be very worried
too.
About her. She's sentenced to how long in jail?
12 years.
Mm-hmm. And she was hurt too, wasn't she?
Yeah, of course. Everybody, you know, during the interrogations, they beat people and they torture people. So, of course, Flora's hurt. And she has hemiparesis.
She has a paralysis?
Yes, on her left side.
Uh-huh.
And she is not in very good health shape.
Have you been able to communicate with her?
Oh, no. Nobody's able to communicate with over 2,000 war prisoners, and they are being kept as hostages in Serbia. Only sometimes members of the family, I mean closest members. Flora is being visited every 2 weeks by her husband. And that's how I get information, through him.
So it sounds like instead of being respected for being a doctor, doctors were punished even more, especially if the doctor's work had some kind of political overtones to it, like yours did and your colleagues who you were just talking about.
Yes, many doctors were abused during these 10 years. I mean, and one of the reasons this all was happening, because it was very systematically planned. And so doctors were one of the first targeted group in Kosovo. And then our activity was controlled. And then finally we were abused on several occasions. I mean, if you look at the how many were arrested, interrogated, and if you just compare, usually journalists are those who are target. If you look at Kosovo case, you have more doctors that are being arrested and abused and beaten and interrogated then journalists of Kosovo. So this just show you what was happening in Kosovo.
Explain a little bit more about why doctors were such a priority to be targeted and punished.
We offered comfort, and we offered services, and we offered psychological support for the population, and we are really in touch with population, so we could influence, and we did influence, and we became a very prominent members of civil disobedience movement in Kosovo. So a regime was afraid of our influence, first thing. Second thing, doctors were very outspoken in denunciating human rights violations in Kosovo. So they just tried to go after us and to arrest us and to interrogate and to torture us.
My guest is Dr. Vjosa Dobruna, an Albanian doctor from Kosovo. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Vjosa Dobruna, and she is a pediatrician and neurologist. She's the president of the Pristina Center for the Protection of Women and Children. She's also the co-head of the new Department for Democratic Governance and Civil Society in Kosovo. Let's get back to the period when you were in a Macedonian refugee camp during the bombing and ethnic cleansing of Kosovo. Were you able to practice medicine there?
No, I was at the camp only first some 22 hours, and then Macedonian police entered the camp, makeshift camp, and start beating people. And then I was forced to leave that camp, and since my parents had already fled earlier, so I joined them in Tetova, and then I started there a new women's center during, you know, after 9 days of my deportation, and I work at the center.
And what kind of work were you doing there?
We're doing same thing, reproductive health, child care, child health. We are doing reporting, and we have set a phone for women to search for their members of families that were missing or that were divided during the deportation, separated during the deportation.
When you returned to Pristina, what kind of condition was the medical center in?
Center was plundered, and most of the documentation, almost all documentation was taken, and some equipment, but not all. The windows were broken, but it was not that bad. I mean, it was what we expected that we are going to find. It was even less than we thought we are going to find, so that's why we could start, and there was a willingness. Seven of women who previously worked at the center in Pristina worked during all time for 3 months at the center in Macedonia. So we just continued with the same work in Kosovo, but now more with women who were victim of sexual abuse. So right away we continued in Kosovo beginning of July.
I'm sure that part of the work that you and your fellow workers are doing with women who are the victims of sexual abuse is talking with them about what it means and how not to be ashamed. Can you tell us a little bit about what kind of counseling you and your colleagues are doing with women who have been raped?
First thing is it's just raising awareness among population that the rape as a war crime is not something that women wanted to happen to them, and they are not guilty for that. So just to have more awareness among population and to support these women psychologically. Second thing is talking and giving to them psychological support with a trained psychologist and other women activists that were trained for this work. And third thing is providing, in some cases, safe spaces for these women who are not able to go back to their families, or some that are not even able to live in Kosovo anymore, so we try to facilitate their stay outside to provide safe spaces for them and to have psychological counseling and even thinking how to find jobs for them, to give them some training and to find jobs for them, because these are mostly women from rural areas and they don't have developed special skills for work.
Tell us a little bit about the arguments that people make who don't want women who have been raped to return home. What do they say about why they're unacceptable now?
When I talk to other members of the family, male members of the family, they're really, you know, and they use a very nice vocabulary, but in practice it's not so. And they just, basically, they force them to isolate because they don't want them out and they don't want community to see these raped women outside, because it reminds them and that they were raped, and they were raped on purpose to humiliate men, Albanian men there. Not, they just even don't respect them that much to say that they are raped for themselves, but they are raped just to punish men around. So it's kind of double punishment for women, and for men it's much harder. And they just, you know, in trauma, what even men of Kosovo went through, you know, they just can't take it. And, you know, and for them it's much more difficult because living and being brought up in patriarchal society where they're educated to be the one who protect the families, and they were they were not able to do that. Not only that their spouses, sisters, daughters were raped in front of them, but in the end, they were being forced to leave their home. So it's going to be very, very, very difficult to overcome this trauma for men too. So, you know, you don't get a reasonable argument. It's just this. And it's just pain, and not even didn't start the process of grieving.
But it's funny, by men allowing that humiliation to continue and by punishing their own women who have been raped, they're playing the Serbs' game. They're allowing the Serbs to make the Albanians more miserable.
This is male game, of course. Yes, but that's why we need support, and we're trying to break this vicious circle. And by kind of trying to empower women, especially raped women.
Dr. Vjosa Dobruna is the founder of the Center for Women and Children in Kosovo. She just received the Jonathan Mann Award for Health and Human Rights. She'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Dr. Vjosa Dobruna, founder of the Pristina Center for the Protection of Women and Children in Kosovo. She just received the Jonathan Mann Award for Health and Human Rights. She is of Albanian descent and was forced to flee Kosovo last year during the Serbs' ethnic cleansing of Albanians. I'm wondering, after what you've been through and after what the people who you work with have been through, if you feel that it's possible for you to coexist with Serbs, or if you feel that in other words, do you feel like it's possible for you who is very educated to differentiate between the Serbs who participated in the ethnic cleansing and those who didn't?
Personally, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, I can differentiate. What I have a problem is with denial of all Serbs. I'm talking about all Serbs, denial of about what's happening in Kosovo. I have a problem with that. I don't have a problem to differentiate that there are criminals in every society. Of course, Serbs were the ones who launched four wars and they participated. And I don't respect the right of Serbs to be in denial, because it's not the first war, and every war, all four wars had the same pattern. And so this is what I'm concerned more about. I'm not concerned about that we have to coexist. And it's not only for the sake of Serbs, it's for the sake of every other inhabitants of Kosovo. We just need to live in the environment with no violence.
The newspapers are reporting now that the NATO countries are considering cutting some kind of deal with Milosevic, in which he would be allowed to leave office with his safety and his savings guaranteed. And this would be a way of getting him out of the presidency of Serbia. What would you think of such a deal? How would that affect your work?
I hope this is a joke from some newspaper journalist. I just can't believe that somebody can make a deal with indicted war criminal after genocide. And I think this is the worst message that can be sent, not only to Kosovo Albanians, Slovenians, Croats, and Bosniaks, but even to Serbian population, because they will feel that the war and genocide are awarded if he is amnested from his responsibilities and from what he did to several million people on former Yugoslavia, of course with the support of other Serbians, but not all of them, then I don't think it's even worth of discussing about this. I don't think they're going to do that.
But wouldn't you like to see him out of office?
Of course I would like to see him out of office, but I would like to see him in the Hague Tribunal, in front of court, not to be amnested.
When you became a doctor, did you ever expect that this was the kind of work that you would be doing, that you would be dealing with victims of spousal abuse and rape as a result of war and ethnic cleansing and bombing?
I don't think so. I ever thought about that, you know, because it was not something that I was aware that existed in my community. I was pretty protected in my family. But, you know, I always had a human rights approach because I had problems. I mean, problems. I had members of family who up to now spent some 35 years in jail for political activity during Tito's time. And so I used to visit jails at least once a month since I was 6 years old until I was 36 years old.
Visiting relatives?
Visiting my uncles, my closest relatives. So I was aware of violation of rights of Albanians, political rights of Albanians in former Yugoslavia. And I, you know, basically I lived with that experience. So, but I was not aware of other problems that existed in my community.
You were not aware of other problems that existed?
No, I was not. I really didn't have any experience of domestic violence, and I didn't see it around, and I was not involved in those things just until after 1985, I start being more active and advocating women's rights.
Do you have any time for a family life or a personal life of your own with the work that you're doing?
Not lately.
And does that upset you?
When I have time to highlight my life, yes, it does.
But you don't often have time to think about it, probably, huh?
Correct.
Okay. What's on the agenda when you return to Pristina?
My agenda? To hire more staff for my department. I'm supposed to have 15 other people to work for my department. I already have 10 international staff that are seconded by OSCE and by different Western governments, and to develop programs that are in my and my co-head's mandate, and to do our best to facilitate next elections.
When do you think the elections might be?
Probably municipality elections are going to be in next October.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us, and I wish you good
luck. Thank you.
Dr. Vioso de Bruna just received the Jonathan Mann Award for Health and Human Rights. Her co-winner is in prison. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air.